OTB Culture Hall of Fame. Brought to you by Now TV. Watch whatever you're in the mood for.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to this week's OTB Culture Hall of Fame, brought to you in association with Now TV, where you can stream every episode of the unmissable new show Gangs of London on the Now TV Entertainment Pass, which also has a 14-day free trial that you can avail of. You can find our previous episodes right now on the OTB Sports app. So we had Andy Lee on Rocky III, we had Dermot Kennedy on Gladiator, we had Joe Cole from Gangs of New York talking about City of God, we had Louisa Harland from Derry Girls talking about Gomorra, and last week we did Peter Coonan talking about The Sopranos. So we might have stolen Eric Donovan's thunder a little bit because we're going to compare and contrast The Wire with The Sopranos. Eric, good morning to you. How are you doing?
Good morning, Ger. I'm very well, thanks.
You have been watching these quite a bit recently before lockdown, is that right? Or was lockdown the kind of starting point for you to go, I'm getting into these?
Well, I started The Sopranos. I've always wanted to watch The Sopranos. I just could never come across the box set or... I remember someone had the box set, but they were missing one series, and that was no good to me. And then finally, we did get it, and we started watching it last year. But Laura was in college at the time as well, and it was driving me mad because I had to wait for her before I could go on to the next episode. And there was one or two times where I had a cheeky watch of an episode or two, but I didn't want to go too far. And have to go back and watch them all again with her. But we loved it. And of course, I put up a tweet. And Twitter has a lot to answer for as well. And because of my tweet, I'm here talking to you this morning about The Sopranos and The Wire. But when I put up a tweet about how good The Sopranos was, everybody said, you got to watch The Wire. The Wire is like people are saying, The Wire trumps The Sopranos. So it was a natural... progression, and I watched The Wire, fantastic as well, absolutely fantastic. But I just think The Sopranos is the number one.
Well, we can tease this out over a period of time. Will wants to make the case for Westworld as well. Are we at least in the same ballpark?
I think it's going to be very difficult to oppose The Sopranos here, Jerry. You put me into terrible trouble. I mean, obviously, we're chatting to Peter Coonan about it last week, and like for me, The Sopranos is kind of like the gold standard because. The sixth series of The Sopranos was just incredible. I think right up until the very final frame of that series was the only one that annoyed people. Everyone loved The Sopranos right the way through. The Wire is an interesting one because obviously I love the world of Baltimore that it creates. I love the fact that there's a very varied world that's available too. But then when you get to kind of season five, I thought season five was a disappointment after season four. For me, season four was the best series of The Wire. And then season five just got a little bit lost along the way. But still, I can enjoy The Wire up to that point. There's a certain part in my mind that goes, I'll just finish The Wire when I do a rewatch after season four and not put myself through season five again. But The Wire has like incredible high points. I'm not sure if it quite found the consistency and maybe not kind of the critical love that The Sopranos had. But that's not to say that The Wire isn't an absolutely thrilling program to watch because, you know, it's one of those really bingey series. Once you watch a few episodes of The Wire, you want to continue watching till the end of the series. I don't know if you find that, Eric.
Yeah, there's a couple of times during The Wire where you kind of, it just kind of go, you know, it lacks that, like if you have a great book, you want to turn the next page, you know, you're watching a great TV series, you want to watch the next episode. There were some episodes where they just dragged out and, you know, a lot of people said that season two, and I kind of agree with them, like, you know, it was a real slow burner and really, but when it took off, like you said there, when it really took off and it started showing the different dynamics in the whole system of how a city works, you know, from the hierarchy of the police department to the government buildings, right down to the streets and then the schools as well, and the problems the schools are facing with the kids that are coming from the disadvantaged areas. Like I just thought there was high points in it that were absolutely excellent, and thought some of those young actors when they come on to the scene that time in season four, they really just lifted the show, didn't they? Completely, like they were incredible in how they acted, and again, it just reflects real life, you know, when you live in a democracy and, you know, when you see the inequality, you know, between, you know, the lower class disadvantaged areas. And what was really kind of fascinating as well was, and I always say this, like boxing is a sport that, you know, was kind of developed in these areas and it thrives in these areas. And it's funny that many people call boxing a working class sport, but I always think that I think boxing is more like a disadvantaged sport, And it's, you know, it's portrayed in that in The Wire there as well, with the with one of the gang, one of the former gangsters who'd done a long stretch in prison. And it was great. It was good to see when he, you know, when he got out, he just hadn't got that fight in him anymore. Initially, when he got out the first time, I think it was Cutty. Yeah, Cutty is
Cutty.
The actor.
Yeah,
yeah, Cutty. I remember when he got out, he looked like a really hard man. Like, and he was also obviously for spending so long in prison, he was given a restart again on the streets, and he was given a stash to be able, you know, to make a few bob or whatever. And he kind of lost his little bit of a savviness of the how the streets work, and he looked for an accomplice, and the accomplice done him in and stole from him, basically stole his stash. And I think at one stage then he just told him to go and get lost, you know. And I just said, oh, this Cuddy lad is going to turn into a monster. Now we're really going to see what, you know, what he was locked up for in the first place. And then he just hadn't got it, you know. And I loved that. Like, the fight wasn't in him anymore, but he wanted to help. He wanted to do, you know, basically, prison in a lot of cases doesn't really work for people. You know, an amount of prison officers that I speak to talk about how much it's like a revolving door, you know. But in that case, it was good to see that, you know, a man had a change of heart and he wanted to do something different.
Yeah, I thought also the bit where so he is a boxing trainer and wants to go and build a gym for the kids in the area. You can kind of see where this is going. He wants to make a difference in their lives by giving them an outlet, but just how difficult it is to actually get a gym set up. You know, the city says, no, you can't just do that. You can't go off your own back and do something without us putting up barriers in the way. And it's like such a small thing, having to fill out forms, having to ask for permission, the permits, and not knowing how the whole system works. I think when you talk about the hierarchy and the systems, like the creator of The Wire has said that essentially he views the world as this kind of Greek tragedy where people are stuck. You are just stuck in whatever system exists and you cannot break out of that. And that's the whole point of the whole series. And when you start thinking about it in those terms and seeing the whole five seasons as like this mad, glorious picture of the whole world at the same time, then it starts to stack up very well, I think, with anything.
Without a doubt. I think, but you mentioned it there, bureaucracy and red tape and all, it's just massive part of the whole series. And I kind of felt that as well, that even from the police department, and I thought it was fantastic acting as well, the way it showed you the different, just to show you the whole system in operation. Even if you look at the streets, what was the objective of the streets? To survive. And then for some of the bigger guys was to go up, to get bigger, to rise up. Even Corchetti, which is played by Aidan Gillen, he was fantastic as well. Aidan Gillen is unbelievable, isn't he? Like, there's more things that, you know, he's in a lot of things. He's an unbelievable actor. And I only became aware of him, like probably many people, when I seen him in Love Hate. But even he had the best intentions to be elected as mayor, to kind of allow police to do real police work and to... He wasn't interested in stats anymore. He was interested in connecting with the people. But then once he got in, system pulled him in, sucked him in. And of course he wanted more. He wanted to go for governor. But in order to go for governor, he had to compromise his principles that he initially went into government. You know, so it's not too dissimilar to what goes on in a normal democratic country. I thought, again, the biggest story of the whole, or the biggest plot or scheme in the whole thing, was again because they couldn't do what they wanted to do, that, you know, they couldn't get the support or the resources that they needed to kind of combat this crime, this problem, this scourge in the streets, which is these big drug lords. And so McNulty had to make, you know, he had to go and make up a serial killer. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable storytelling.
It is. And look, that season five comes in for a lot of criticism. But like a couple of things about season five, as far as I know, they kind of had the money cut from them in the middle of it. So there should have been another couple of episodes to allow everything to unfold at the same pace that the other seasons had unfolded. And so everything gets quite condensed very quickly. The fake news, which is like a decade ahead of actual fake news becoming a Trump thing, and which may kind of all be connected in a weird way, That and the serial killer thing, which when you say it doesn't sound that ridiculous, but when it's actually unfolding, the way it unfolds so quickly and the way everybody just kind of rose in behind it, it needed another episode or two for everybody to reach a point of mega frustration. Like, and I thought that for me, that's the only weakness in it, is that it is a couple of episodes short as opposed to the story being too ridiculous.
Yeah, I thought it was okay, you know. I thought it was okay, but it was a bit bizarre in the sense that, like, I was like, where the hell is this going? Like, you can't actually think, you can't actually pull this off, really, can you? Like, come on. And even Bunk was saying to him, like, you know, you're crazy. I don't even want to be, you know, Bunk is obviously McNulty's partner. He goes, I don't want to be associated with you in any way. You know, you're as bad as the guys we're out here trying to catch, you know. But what was brilliant and was to see McNulty actually, I don't think he believed he could go. He would go as far as he would go himself. And then Lester kind of gave him a little bit of confidence. And Lester's brilliant character in it as well. And for me, the best line of the whole series, of the whole Wire, is when he makes this phantom serial killer, and the police department start to believe him. And then they start throwing resources at him. They throw detectives at him. They throw overtime. They throw patrol cars. What do you want? Anything you want. And then once they solve the crime that they initially wanted to catch, the organized crime gang, the drug dealers, you could see that he was stuck and he didn't know what to do. And he was hoping that it would just, you know, it would stop popping its head up. You know, homeless men won't be, you know, their debts won't be interfered with anymore, and there won't be any. There won't be any calls anymore, and this will just fizzle out. And Jay, the homicide detective, was on his case, saying, "Hey, I told you, you know, what are you doing?" And McNulty is like, "I'm after, you know, I'm there's no more Jay. It's gone quiet. They interviewed everybody, but like." And Jay goes, "You need to get out there. You know, he's on his case, really, really. Like, he's telling him, you need to get out there. You need to kind of use your brain." And this is the line. McNulty goes, "What do you want me to do? Make shit up?" And I just thought, wow, you know, it's brilliant. I had to press pause there at that time because I laughed for a while.
The book that, so David Simon, the guy who essentially created the whole thing, was a journalist with the Baltimore Sun. That's why the newspaper stuff is so personal to him. And he wrote a book called Homicide, A Year in the Streets, where he spent a year in the backseat of patrol cars with the homicide detectives in Baltimore, in that precinct. And a load of a couple of the actors are actually ex-cops. Mm. And so he kind of, a lot of that conversations that you hear are actually in the book. They're verbatim of what would have happened, that he would have borne witness to. So that bit, the kind of, the police and the policing system and how brutal that system is and the pressures that they're under, I think it's interesting to kind of understand that with what's going on at the moment, where essentially policing in America has become corrupted by white supremacy and racism. And to see the pressure that the police departments themselves are under and where that's coming from in terms of stats and how that all feeds into each other is a kind of very interesting thing to think about while America is aflame at the moment.
Oh, it is, without a doubt, you know. And you think that that whole series started off almost 18 years ago, 2002 it was launched. And there was one part in the film as well. Well, not only one part, there's a huge part. It shows you there's a lack of value put onto young black men's lives. You know, 18 bodies. And you know, the newspaper is, you know, deciding to not cover the story. And, you know, it's not getting the attention that it really needs. And it's no surprise that we are in this, you know, in this position right now. Well, America's in this position right now with the whole racism and inequality and all that, because it's very, very apparent, you know. And it's sad. It's really, really sad to see, because there is good. You can see the good-hearted people in the system like that are trying to do something. Like there's a couple of brilliant situations where it showed that even Sergeant Carver wanted to try and adopt the young kid that went back into the foster home, the group home. And then obviously there was one, Bunny, the former Sergeant Bunny, who took it upon himself to adopt Naaman. Like, you know, and Naaman was this is what's very interesting as well, is a lot of these young kids are so smart, so intelligent. They grow up with their street savvy. They're wise. They're street wise. They don't have any. There's no emphasis or importance put onto their education. They don't have any support there. It's all about survival when they go outside the front door. But they're just used as statistics when it comes to school. They're just all about ticking a box, you know. And even how hard it was to break down the educational system to show that these guys need to learn in a different way, you know. And Bunny tried to kind of try to change the education system. And I know that that was... I know that was tough, but do you know what? I can identify with that. When I was in school, I wasn't the most articulate. I struggled in school, really, really struggled academically. And, you know, I was gone at 15, but I was just thinking, like, you know, that it's not too different here as well. When you're coming from a family that there's no real importance or emphasis put onto education, you know, the education, you can slip through the system very quick. I was very lucky. I had boxing and I just kind of had somewhere to kind of channel my energy into. But later on, when I was ready academically, I was able to go back. But, you know, some of these kids are lost through the system. One of the saddest parts of the whole thing for me was to just see Du Quan at the very, very end. Which was just heartbreaking. It really was heartbreaking. A young kid with so much promise, so much potential. And you see when Presbo, the teacher, former policeman, once he put a bit of effort and a bit of effort, a bit of care and a bit of attention into this young kid, just blossomed. And but obviously, you know, the connection was broke somewhere along the way.
Yeah, the scene opens, the whole series opens with players playing chess, and they're like, the king say the king is how that is. It's like the king is always going to be the king, because, and that means loads of different things. The king is going to be the king from a drug ping perspective, but the king doesn't change and the system doesn't change. Everybody has their role. Dookie's role was to be born a young, essentially an orphan from the get-go in a drug-infested environment. And it's almost impossible for him to break out, even with a tiny little bit of help along the way. It's tragic. And that's why I think this is absolutely amazing work. And it's still amazing work 20 years on. Like, it's incredibly relevant. Yeah. I love The Sopranos. The Sopranos is way funnier than...
Yeah.
Like, every time you watch... I think it's a good idea to secretly watch a lot of episodes and then to have to go back and watch them again. Because actually, Peter Coonan said he watched the whole thing 3 times and got something different out of it every time.
Yeah.
I've got a confession. I've watched The Sopranos 3 times and it's absolutely hilarious. As it goes along and you take the, is he going to kill this guy? Is that guy going to get killed? When you know what the plot is, you can kind of just settle in and relax at the jokes, because they kind of come thick and fast. And that's maybe, there's not much crack in, there's a bit of crack. There's an amazing scene
different
where...
Different type of crack.
Well, where Bunk and McNulty are on the scene of a murder and only use one word repeatedly, it's an all-time classic scene.
Yeah. I loved The Sopranos as well. Like, I loved every single episode. I think when it came to the whole act, I tell you what it is, because we loved The Godfathers and The Goodfellas. We loved the mafia films. We just absolutely loved them. And we never wanted those films to end. They were so good. And they're all around 2-3 hours long. So when The Sopranos come on, it was like having, you know, you're having a marathon, ultra marathon of just mafioso, organized Italian crime, from the Italian families that we fell in love with. And I say that, like, fall in love with, it's gas, because, like, oh, excuse me, I'm pushing my table there, wobbling the camera. Even Tony Soprano, he's a guy that we should hate. He's a murderer. He's a cold-blooded monster, but he draws you in. You want to love him. He's like, sometimes he's like a big, soft, lovable rogue. And then he just changes in an instant into this like cold-blooded murderer, intimidator, manipulator. Like, he just, it's incredible. I believe even like I thought the acting of that, of The Sopranos, was just incredible. And I couldn't wait to do a little bit of research, because I didn't know much about James Gandolfini. I knew he passed away, and which is really tragic as well, but way before his time. But I couldn't wait to do some, you know, a little bit of watching him in interviews and everything. And I remember watching his first, the first clip I watched of him on YouTube of collecting one of his Emmy Awards. And even when he spoke for the first time and I heard him speaking out of character, I was really let down, you know. So I felt let down. So I was like, it's not Tony Soprano, do you know what I mean? Because I had, like, just only knew him as Tony Soprano. So it was, but what a show. And some of the cast said that some of their best acting lessons were hanging around during the whole during the whole filming, watching Tony and Carmela deliver some masterclasses inside the house. Like, the rest of them didn't have to be there, but they hung around because they just said that they were masterclasses. They hung around watching them, and they were fantastic.
Yeah, I think the Sopranos probably is ahead slightly. Like, if you think about how important a work like The Wire would be now, and still is, and still has so much currency, like. The story of The Sopranos, essentially, it's a family drama, kitchen sink drama with loads of violence and guns and drugs and sex. So, like, you know, it's kind of what everybody wants to watch on TV for 80 hours. It's slightly an extended. I think the level of consistency that they have certainly gives it an advantage when it comes to power ranking here things. I should remind everybody, of course, that these are both available to stream right now on Now TV. You can get The Sopranos, you can get The Wire. We're not talking about Succession. Is Succession HBO? I don't know. If it is, we should be talking about it in these terms. And if you haven't seen Succession yet, that should be next.
It's incredible.
If we were to power rank them, if there's a one ahead of the other, is The Sopranos slightly ahead? It sounds like it is for you, Eric.
I just think it is. The acting is just incredible. But, like, you know, but it is that kind of it portrays a family, a mafia family, you know, with handed down traditions from before, you know, to try and keep the family going. They think they're the good guys, but they're really bad guys, like, you know what I mean? But I think. And for in terms of entertainment, it's really, really good for entertainment. You know, the one-liners in it are just like, you know, they're a dozen a minute, like, and yeah. I mean, Paulie's one of the best actors I've ever seen. He's incredible. And then The Wire obviously is portraying a city, the whole system, which is very much like real life, and how the morale can go in the force, in the police force, and, you know, when they're not getting. The support and the resources that they need, you know, morale, apathy, that can all just, like, set in. And even at one stage, I think it was like McNulty couldn't afford to pay child support, you know. Here's a man, like a detective. Now, I know he was doing a fair amount of drinking as well, so that didn't help, you know, especially when he was paying for rounds and whatnot. But, like, it just showed you the real life struggles, even of the good guys that we call the good guys. And then nothing really changes at the end of The Wire. So people are talking about the endings of both. Nothing really changes at the end of The Wire. It's just back to square one. Do we ever learn? It's the same system. Someone else will come in and take over the running of the drugs. You know, the sergeant goes on to the mayor goes to governor, whatever. And it's just the system just plays around. But the kids, the devastation in the kids and the people that fall through the system and fall through the cracks, you know, they're irreparable.
100%. And I think, you know, from a, if you were to say which of these is going to have a longer term impact on society, like The Sopranos has become a huge kind of cultural force. The Wire hasn't quite reached that same level, I don't think. But actually, I think in 30 years time, people are going to go back and watch The Wire and go, this predicted a lot of the stuff that is still happening. I don't know, if we were to power rank them, I guess you got to pick here. That's the problem, that we ask people to come on and make a commitment to something. So is it Sopranos 1, Wire 2? Is it a short head?
Yeah, Sopranos for me, because of the entertainment value in it. And just like, because, like, you know, when you watch one TV, you want to watch entertainment. The Wire, though, actually is more like real life. More like real life, current affairs, what's going on in society. A brilliant, absolutely brilliant portrayal of how it all works. And I think if you're going to ask me about standing the test, I think The Wire will stand the test of time. I think The Wire will be as much as relevant in 30 years time. And therefore, like, you know, I can see that being that even The Wire didn't get the recognition in the first few years, I believe, either.
Yeah.
You know, people weren't really interested in it. No, you know, maybe why is that? You know, I wonder why that is, because it's very real. It was very real then. It's very real now. Do people choose to look away? You know, do we even know we're looking away? Do we bury our heads in the sand? You know, it because it's very factual, fact of matter stuff that's happening. And
what do you think? Well, that's look, it's an interesting point. What do you think? Because, like, you know, I see you.
I think
you go out and talk to schools all the time. You know that people are looking away.
I think there's an element of it, an element of ignorance, you know, just like ignorance is bliss. You know what I mean? And it's not our problem. It's their problem. You know, that kind of way. So, you know, it's society's problem. You know, we're all part of society. We're all the one, you know. We can't just point fingers and say that problem's over there and it's grand once it doesn't come over on my side of the street. That's ridiculous thinking, you know. You know, if you're going to, you know, it's like anything. You know, anyone that's involved in sport knows this, you know what I mean? If you have only, you know, 12 or 15 players performing, you know, you're not going to win. Most of the time you won't win anyway. Very rare that you will probably get across the line with the victory. Everybody on a team. And that's what I see in society. It's a team. It's a collective effort from everybody. You can't, if there's one cog in the wheel damaged or not pulling the weight, you know, the rest is affected. So that would be my take on it. And I'm in some ways, I hope, I'm optimistic. I hope that, you know, that recent events can actually, sometimes that things like that need to happen, do you know? There needs to be that kind of revolutionary kind of shake-up. But will it go back? Will it change radically the way it's supposed to change? That's hard to know. That's really hard to know, because I still think the divide, the disparity between black and white is huge. It's huge still over in America, at least anyway. So, and then, you know, the inequality, and it's shocking, really.
Yeah, I would hope that we in this country take an opportunity to have a conversation about everything that's happened over the last 6 months, both globally and here, like ourselves. Like, what kind of country do we want to live in when you're talking about, like, there's inequality here, and we probably, again, are kind of quite happy to look over at America and go, geez, that's terrible over there, isn't it, without actually addressing the fact that this inequality does exist. There are parts of Ireland that are incredibly poor.
My 8-year-old son is in a school project Nefa in Atai, and it's a multicultural school now, and I've never once heard, he's 8 now, I've never once heard him, and just like all people of all races, all backgrounds in his class, from multicultural class, I've never once heard him mention white, black, anything like that. Nothing. Never. Once. You know, just the names of the people that's in his class, and that's it.
So all it took was a normalization.
Yeah, but like I think that, I am positive for the future. Like I think the younger kids, and again it goes back to learned behavior. I think it's a lot of this kind of fear that people have, especially in America. It's a different level over there. You know, the fear that's in them. Like, you know, the fear of love, fear of connecting. You know. We're no different from each other. And I just think that young kids, a lot of the behavior that's going on is learned behavior. And anything that we can learn, we can relearn. You know, if you'd looked at the Wire illustrates that very good with Naaman, you know, he only knew how to be a gangster. He wasn't very good. And his mother was pushing him even into the gangster world.
Yeah.
His father was pushing him. But Bunny, the former sergeant, police sergeant, through perseverance and effort, was able to reteach him, you know, and he was able to relearn a different way. And I think that's what needs to happen. People need to relearn, check in with themselves, check in with their core beliefs, their values, and realize that there is nothing to be afraid of. We are all the one.
100%. You know? I should tell everybody, Succession is a HBO, and it is also available to stream on Now TV at the moment. People are asking us about that. So a reminder, watch whatever you're in the mood for on Now TV. Eric, in terms of training and staying fit, we've seen the footballers come back over the last week or so. And you know, some of them, their touch has been a bit off. You were sparring this week for the first time, is that right?
Yeah, I was, yeah, sparring there Monday there for the first time. And I've been very lucky now that I was, well, I say lucky, but like you may kind of make your own luck. I trained all the way through lockdown. I did online fitness classes as well. And thanks to the Kildare Sports Partnership for getting behind that initiative. And then I'm working with some companies as well, doing private online classes and that. So it's good. It gave me the incentive to keep working and keep going. And right through for the whole 3 months, three, 4 months, I was able to train and I'm very, very fit. And all I need to do is sharpen up now with my sparring and stuff, and hopefully I can get news on a fight soon. I know my manager's working behind the scenes there trying to get me, trying to secure my next fight, and so I hope to have news for you soon on that, please God.
Would that be like August time, August, September? Is that when you might be allowed
to get back in? There's a lot of shows coming on now around August. There's a lot of boxing happening in August. I hope there's an international ban at the moment, like for, you know, like opponents from, you know, South America, you know, Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
So a lot of the shows that are going on in the UK. And they can only be British or Irish opponents. So I'm hoping, I'm making myself available, and hopefully my manager can secure me a fight. So.
Well, we'll talk to you again around that time. Fingers crossed. And you've been great on lockdown. Your YouTube channel has been a huge success, and I know that it has been a source for people who have wanted to stay active and to get a bit of advice on it too. So what's the YouTube channel address?
Just Eric Donovan. YouTube channel, Eric Donovan, yeah. And you'll see a load of boxing videos there, and a few fitness videos and a couple of tips and tricks on how to get healthy and stay fit.